All right, noted for the record, Rep. Nierman is excused. Mr. Bender, you ready to go?
Yes.
Thank you very much, colleagues. With that gavel, I have convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for February the 8th. We are here today for the purpose of a work session on Oregon Business Development Department, position reclassifications, and an informational meeting on the Regional Solutions Program update. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Your first item today is a work session. OBDD is coming forward to you with a position reclassifications request. I just wanted to take a second, or not more than a second, but a moment to discuss position reclassifications, because I know this is an issue that doesn't normally come before you. And what this is the agency has reorganized their structure and modified the responsibilities of many of the positions that had existed in the department. And what they are coming forward to you today is to request your approval to reclassify the positions to reflect the new organizational structure. The revision in the organizational structure was something that was known in the 2017 session and was mentioned, but there wasn't a lot of, perhaps you don't remember, that would be very reasonable, there, because there wasn't a specific budget request associated with it. The reorganizational structure restructuring was to occur at no additional cost to the department. What they're coming forward to you today is, at this point, they would like you to approve the formal reclassification of their positions. This is a process that does not always, or even perhaps typically, involve legislative action when it occurs in the middle of a biennium, because there is a process that allows this to be done administratively. There are a number of requirements in order for that to occur administratively, one of them being that the plan can't cost any more, either this biennium or in the future, assuming the incumbents in the positions all reach their top steps. This is called a permanent finance plan if you're able to reclassify positions at no additional cost. The request coming before you today is primarily a permanent finance plan. It would not cost any more money to implement these changes. The agency is coming forward, therefore, even though this is not strictly necessary, in order to be clear to you in what they're doing and how their reorganization is proceeding. There is, however, some component of the request that could not be approved through a permanent finance plan, because it does actually increase costs by expanding two positions from half-time to full-time. Actually, when you get to the LFO recommendation, we are not going to be recommending that part at this time. But the other part, we will be recommending that you approve, but the department is here to explain what they're requesting.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? There being none, we'd invite the department forward.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Johnson, Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Wilfong, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Oregon Business Development Department. As Mr. Bender summarized, our agency is requesting a position reclassification package or permanent finance plan, totaling 22 positions. Funding within our current agency budget. This proposed reclass package has been approved by DAS Human Resource Office, and we have identified a business reason for the change, being the new strategic direction and alignment of current organizational resources to achieve the plan. Specifically, the goal of the new strategic direction is to enhance service delivery within the 12 regions, break down internal division silos between business development and infrastructure teams, establish a cohesive agency framework, and increase operational flexibility within the current budget that we have for the 17-19 biennium. To aid in achieving these goals, the department has aligned programs and services into a new organizational structure, one that we did briefly mention in our Ways and Means presentation for 17-19 budget development. And this new organizational structure was effective within the agency as of January of 2017. Within this structure alignment, one outcome was to combine the previous Business Innovation and Trade Division and the Infrastructure Division into a single Economic Development Division. An overview of the changes made with this proposal directly related to the structure alignment is prior, we had business development officers, or BDOs, within the Business Innovation and Trade, and they were principal executive manager Fs, and we are reclassifying those positions in this package to operation and policy analyst fours, now within the regional development team as regional development officers. Also, prior, we had regional coordinators within the Infrastructure Finance Authority, who were program analyst threes, and now within the regional development team as regional project managers classified as operations and policy analyst threes. This self-funded permanent finance plan is a foundational element of the realignment, and today we would request approval of this plan as we finalize the new strategic direction of the department. Thank you. And
thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions?
Yeah.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, when you down classify an individual, do they take a cut in pay, or do you freeze them until inflation brings it into a line, or how do you deal with that?
Co-chairs, Senator Monroe, in this situation, we did redline them, and so they were technically not losing pay, but there is a ceiling in the position classification, which is lower than the PEMF. So, and there is a potential for a percentage increase. Obviously, we have COLAs and things of that nature coming up in the biennium. So there are things for them to look forward to as far as pay increases.
Okay. Thank you.
Colleagues, Senator Rudin, or Representative Rudin.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I think I am on the same channel as the Senator. And so in this reclassification, then, is there a lesser opportunity for increasing their income over time, or is it the same? Or I'm just concerned about our ability to keep good people.
Co-chairs, Representative Rudin, I would say that that we are attempting to reward individuals. I know that there was some positions that were not filled, and so we have several new individuals in these positions. So some of that helps, and to where we don't have incumbents in the positions at the very highest step. So there has been a lot of change within regions and different individuals moving to different regions when we did this reorganization and added these representatives into the regions. So, and there is an opportunity for, you know, a 10% above, you know, for some of these individuals who are at the top step. So we are not, you know, so that we're not capping them and they're not able to, you know, achieve the higher rate and we're losing good people.
Yeah.
So we did take those things into account when we put this plan together.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Before I entertain a target of opportunity question, I've set a bad example for Senator Hansel, and he's going to pursue it. I want to make a disclosure on the record. I sit at the pleasure of the Senate President as a non-voting member of the OBDD Commission. So now, Senator Hansel, your target of opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Well, following the leadership of certain members of this council and occasionally a target of opportunity, I would like to bring forward something, if I may. We worked hard in the last session to get some money allocated to certain projects. In my district, it was the Liberty Theater. Another project was the Oregon Coast Council in Newport. Another one was Portland's Contemporary Arts. And I know for sure, and it's really frustrating for two reasons. Number one, we filled out the Liberty Theater in LeGrand, filled out the DAS paperwork in December. They filled out and returned the grant application January 2nd. They said the money would be forthcoming soon, would be sent right away. Nothing has happened throughout the entire month. Nothing has happened in February. My office has left messages, at least two phone calls, no response, three emails, no reply. And we've checked with other recipients. Senator Roblin's office, as far as you know, the Oregon Coastal Council in Newport has received nothing. We checked with Senator Frederick's office, the Portland's Contemporary Arts. They thought they had, but we're checking further. It's really frustrating. I don't know what to do. The money's been allocated. They filled out all the forms. They need that as they go into the construction season. And if somebody could get back to me where that is and why, not only why they're not getting the money, but why our office isn't getting a proper response, I'd appreciate it.
If you would prefer to prepare to answer that question and get back to Senator Hansel later, you didn't expect that. It was not on topic. And I think if you'd like the opportunity to consult with the agency, I would share with the group, and this is going to come up in the next presentation, that I think there is a great deal of ambiguity about the rules. I don't think that the regional solutions people know their own rules. We got in a situation where an appropriation was made through the legislature, and because there was such ambiguity, a project that was approved by the legislature, voted on in both houses, passed through, money appropriated, the money never materialized because it was not well known that there was a requirement to list projects in the bond materials for the tranche of bonds. And so I think this is something that the legislature, the governor's office, and the agency need to have a little chat about is the rules. But I will afford you the courtesy of having the opportunity to get back to Senator Hansel.
Thank you, co-chairs. Senator Hansel, I appreciate your comments. And in fact, I believe you're speaking about the allocation of the $1.65 million in general fund for the arts organizations.
Right.
And I actually just followed up with all of those seven recipients yesterday. Our procurement and contract manager was following up on it, and I will get back with you specifically on the status of those seven recipients.
Thank you. It'd be great to know that the check's in the mail.
And I think the takeaway here is that it is serendipitous that the check is in the mail, but the agency's government affairs person is in the audience. A delay in the check is fine. No phone calls, not fine. And so if you guys will follow up on this offline, that would be great. Any other questions? Representative Noble.
Thank you, Senator. This is not the same topic, but maybe related. Overall, since I don't have your strategic direction in front of me, would it be correct to assume that this provides a flatter, more nimble organization able to respond appropriately?
Co-chairs, Representative Noble, yes. That I would say overall, the goal is to bring the business development and the infrastructure side together, and actually make it more of a make it known more so that those two elements are within Business Oregon or within OBDD. Because prior it was very much so people would just understand that, you know, or just know of the infrastructure side if they hadn't been involved with any of the business development side of our agency. So one of the goals was to put them together and have a more of a one-stop shop when it came to all of the opportunities that are within our agency within the 12 areas of our state.
Follow-up comment? That's good, because if there was one part of the state of Oregon that should reflect more how private business runs as opposed to a government bureaucracy, Business Oregon would be it. So,
Representative Noble, if I may just respond anecdotally, in our region, it has turned out to be wonderful. But then we have a couple of rock stars. And no matter what their org chart looks like, if they don't have can-do, want-to, will-do people, it doesn't matter. And that's been one of the real difficulties, is finding the folks that will engage, take responsibility, think outside the box, be nimble and responsive. And that will be a continuing challenge for the agency to hire those people that are the outward-looking face of the state in looking at economic development projects. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's the same with the regional solutions teams. If you don't have good people, you don't have much of a program.
Agreed.
Good point.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. Is that your presentation?
That is.
Cool. Mr. Bender.
The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that you approve the reclassification of 22 positions to support a new organizational structure for the agency.
Thank you. And colleagues, just so you don't think that I'm bungling this, apparently we will not be asking for a CFO recommendation, so I will ask Co-Chair Gomberg for a motion.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I would move approval of the recommendation to reclassify 22 positions to facilitate the reorganization.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Any questions? Any discussions? Any objections? So ordered. And now we need carriers.
You do not, actually.
Oh.
This way we will, based on your approval of this action, we'll include language reflecting that in the budget report for the budget reconciliation bill.
Thank you very much.
Well, in that case, I'll be happy to carry it.
Gomberg carries. All right. So with that, we're going to close the work session on the position reclassifications for Oregon Business Development Department and open an informational meeting on the Regional Solutions Program update and invite Mr. Bender to introduce the subject.
Thank you again, Madam Co-Chair. Regional Solutions, you approved funding $4 million of lottery bonds to support Regional Solutions projects during the current biennium. The bonds are scheduled to be issued in the spring of 2019, so more than a year from now. At the time, during the 2017 session, when you approved the funding, you also established a $1 expenditure limitation for these proceeds, meaning that, and directed the department to come back with a funding request that identified Regional Solutions projects before increasing that limitation and allowing the projects to proceed. Program is not coming forward at this time with an actual request that you approve funding of specified projects. However, they are coming forward to provide you with a program update and a status of their work at this time.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? We have two presenters listed, Jason Lewis-Berry from the governor's office and Mr. MacArthur from AOC, and you're invited to come up together. I don't care what order you bat in. You guys decide, introduce yourselves. I think Mr. Lewis-Berry will be first. And one of the things I want you to touch on, I don't want to disrupt your presentation, but I want a conversation about the rules of engagement. That is so ambiguous that we have left people expecting performance, and we're not performing. So with that, please commence.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jason Lewis Berry. I'm the Director of Regional Solutions and the Governor's Advisor for Economy and Jobs. So as has been stated, I'm here to provide an update on regional solutions, specifically the Regional Infrastructure Fund. And before I dive into the Regional Infrastructure Fund, the RIF, as we call it, I wanted to start, I always try to start by making sure I put it in context. The Regional Infrastructure Fund is an important piece, but it's just one piece of what Regional Solutions does. So I start with a slide that you're probably already familiar with. Some of you know Regional Solutions very well. But just to remind you, the underlying point of the program here is that we put the state's influence, whether that's technical assistance or various resources from different agencies, or the way that we help partner with different levels of government or across agencies, we put all of that at the disposal of locally generated economic and community development priorities. Just to further that context a little bit, these are the type of things that I see as our bread and butter. So our first instinct as a regional solutions program and the regional solutions teams that you have throughout the state, the first instinct isn't just to spend money. The first instinct is solve problems, find ways to make government work better. The second piece is how do you build partnerships? How do you make the whole greater than the sum of the parts? And that means how do you get cities, counties, the state, sometimes federal level, private sector, nonprofits, foundations, et cetera, all to be working together. Now, in some cases, of course, it is economic development. Money is necessary. But again, our first instinct there when we get into looking for funds is not to go straight to the Regional Infrastructure Fund. There's a wide range of programs across state government that have funds to do all sorts of things related to infrastructure. So our teams work on finding the right alignment between the kind of needs that are out there and the right part of state government. Now, in some cases, of course, the Regional Infrastructure Fund is a good tool to use, and that's what I want to talk about for the rest of the presentation.
You have opened the door, so I just want you to flag it. Okay. Fire recovery and workforce housing. There seems to be a lot of misunderstanding out in the field about what fire recovery actually means, and the Fire Caucus would love to hear that because there's mythology and misunderstanding. And the next thing is that I think all of us that heard the State of the State speech heard regional solutions being tasked by the governor to solve the housing crisis. I'd like to know what's the interface with Margaret Salazar's Oregon Housing and Community Development. My fear is that we're going to look like a box of mice somebody tipped over. And I don't know if you all have a coordinated strategy and are looking at this across regions or what the plan is. And I think for those of us that struggle with people with inadequate housing, we'd like to know what the plan is.
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. We are working really closely with Margaret Salazar and her department as part of the Regional Solutions Cabinet process. That's how we've been tasked to be involved in the workforce housing challenge. And also happy to talk with folks about the fire recovery. The involvement of Regional Solutions was specifically around the two wildfire recovery councils that the governor created around the Chetco Bar fire and the Eagle Creek fire, where you had Regional Solutions teams working to support the local areas in figuring out how the state could help with their economic recovery.
I think all of us, to one degree or another, were touched by that fire. Could you give us a list of what the outcomes were of that meeting so that we know what the checklist of to-dos is?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so continuing now, thanks for your patience. I set the context now to talk about the Regional Infrastructure Fund. As Mr. Binder said, the fund has been appropriated, though there is a limitation, appropriated up to $4 million for this biennium, and that is across the 11 regions. You might know that there are 11 Regional Solutions regions across the state. So to talk about how the amount of these funds will be used, just if we it's not that they will be used equally, but if you did the math is up there. If it was divided by 11, it would be about $363,000 per region.
Let me stop you again. When you said the magic words, if distributed equally, right, every single one of us is here as an advocate for our place.
Right.
What did that mean,
right,
if distributed equally?
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. The rules that were created must have been about it over a year ago, shortly, I think, before I started in this job, said that a minimum of 5% of the total allotted would be reserved for each of the 11 regions. So given the $4 million total amount that we're dealing with now, that means across 11 regions, that minimum 5% gives the $200,000 figure that you see. So there's a guarantee that each of the 11 regions would have $200,000 in this pot. Now, the rest, which is the balance, is $1.8 million. The rest is open for statewide competition.
And how does that competition work? Who is the adjudicatory authority? How do they get to sit at the table? What's the presentation process? How do we make sure that there's some modicum of geographic equity? How do we know the cream is funded? If you could touch on that.
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I'll just flip to this next slide to look at the timeline here, the process. So the call for applications will come out, we think, in March. Then there's a few steps here, but just skip directly to Senator Johnson's question. In that lower right-hand box, you see the Business Oregon Review. There is a stage in there where a combination, a joint group that is drawn from the Infrastructure Finance Authority Board and the Business Development Commission will be the arbiter of the statewide competition.
Okay, sorry to be such a pain about this, but in your application process, is there any requirement to indicate how a project is doing with respect to, say, Open Connect Oregon projects, or if they've gotten into trouble with other state? What assures that this isn't just a beauty contest?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. The criteria for the RIF applications have a few guiding principles. One is it has to be a job creator or job retainer. Another is it has to advance a already defined regional priority. Now, those priorities are set by the advisory committees over each of the 11 regions. And another is that the RIF funding not be the only skin in the game. The RIF is at its best when it's leveraging some other types of resources, and that's what you would find in the kind of projects that are moved forward in the RIF process.
Representative Gomber.
Co-Chair, thank you. And good afternoon, gentlemen. What happens in the unlikely event that a region doesn't come forward with a $200,000 ask that meets those criteria?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, I do think it's unlikely, as you said. $200,000, we've already got a sense of the needs around the state, and all of the regions have identified some potential contenders that I think we're likely to see the applications. Now, if they don't meet the quality criteria that we expect, then we would be relying on first the review by the regional solutions teams in each region to make sure that these are worth advancing. And then you'll see that next box upper right is the advisory committees for each of the region. They're responsible for putting forward the recommendations that would move on to the Business Oregon stage. And we would be expecting that committee to not move forward any projects that did not meet the standards.
Does the project have to be completed with this money? What I'm wondering about is this the last money in that finishes it, or is it the first money in? And it was Representative Gomberg's question that caused me to query this. I worked on a project in what is now his district. It is the escape route out of the village of Neskowin. Mm-hmm. It lacks about $1 million to be able to be finished. My question is, why are we creating a process here that will advance other projects for a de minimis amount of money when we can't get the stuff that's already open on the books done? So is it possible in this application for the village of Neskowin to come back and say, apply our $200,000 towards this already undone project?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Absolutely. Any project that the Regional Solutions Advisory Committee prioritizes is eligible for this process. So the Neskowin Emergency Access Road, for example, is absolutely. And I think the beginning of your question, Senator, was about first in or last in. It could be either. It's just an expectation that these funds are not the only funds going into a project.
Okay, so let's assume that they're successful and it's first money in. What's the time horizon? Because let's assume each district gets $200,000. I can do the math easier that way. So $200,000 worth of available funds have been subscribed. That's the first money in, and it's a $4 million project. What's the time horizon that a project can lay claim to precious funds and not raise the money to complete the project? And what's the reverter process? Or are we driving $200,000 projects and leaving the escape route out of Neskowin undone forever?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I think these part of the evaluation of any project application would include assessing the viability, the broader financing of it. I think it's unlikely that the advisory committees in Business Oregon would be moving forward recommendations on a project that didn't have other money already closer to being locked in.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, thank you. So we've pretty much talked about this slide. Maybe I'll just make sure we've hit all the points. So the applications starting in March, evaluations by each of the regional solutions teams, leading to the advisory committees making their recommendations. Then it goes into Business Oregon. There's a couple of things happening in Business Oregon. We've talked about the joint IFA board and Business Development Commission group that would be the arbiter of the statewide question. I also want to point out that the finance team at Business Oregon, which is very capable, will be giving these projects a very thorough review. I think it's important to have that technical review about the viability of what's being proposed. So those that all happens inside that Business Oregon box. And then we would be, I think the target that we've had in mind is to come to emergency board to bring these to the legislator for formal review and approval, which if I remember guidance from Mr. Bender indicated we would be submitting a letter to the legislature in August with the projects on them.
Apropos Senator Hansel's question, when you have contracting in the winter of 2018 and spring of 2019, are you going to use a common contract, and is DOJ already teed up and have that in the drafting? Or for some of these projects, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but $200,000 is not an enormous amount of money when you're trying to rebuild a road. Mm-hmm. Are these contracts locked and loaded at this point so that there can be a nimble response and the money can hit the street as soon as the bond sale is concluded?
Co-Chair Johnson, thanks for the question. I would have to defer to my colleagues from Business Oregon who manage the contracts. I don't have
Mr.
that.
Mr. Cummings, come on down.
Oh, Mike, go ahead. Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Chris Cummings. I'm the Assistant Director of Business Oregon for Economic Development. Regarding the question about the contracts, our infrastructure section, if you will, which is now part of economic development overall, is somewhat like a machine. We do a very good job at getting those contracts done and out, and we have template contracts prepared that we can pull these funds, pull for use on these funds. So in other words, just like we would fund a water project or a street project, they're essentially the same contracts. And if these funds are used for some sort of business project or something a little different, we have those contract templates available as well.
They in the same drawer where the arts templates are?
No.
Just asking.
Thank you. But the infrastructure business contracts are pretty well sorted out, and we can get those monies out the door quickly.
Thank you. All right. Please continue. No. Mr. Lewis Berry.
Thank you. So just a couple more comments on this slide. One is one of the things that has been adjusted, and I do want to recognize Co-Chair Johnson's point earlier about in the previous biennium there had been a couple of projects too, I believe one was in the North Coast region, that did get off track. And
off track? It got assassinated.
Well, that's so this process is, there's a couple of things here. One is that we have put in more of the review stages with Business Oregon before bringing it to the legislature for review. I think that will help with the due diligence and the technical review. And we've also, in that process, it does a couple of things. One is it gets more time for the regional solutions teams, those interagency teams, to make sure that truly the RIF is the right tool for this project. You know, making sure that there's not some other tool somewhere in the state government that would be better. And it also gets us to the actual approval of the projects happening much closer to the bond sale. Whereas in previous biennium, if I understand correctly, you had the legislature review and approve projects earlier in the biennium, and then you had a long delay before the bonds were sold in the spring towards the end of the biennium, and that posed some challenges. So I think we have a better process here.
Two other questions. It wasn't just the duration of time between the appropriation and the bond sale. It was the absolute lack of clarity about the rules. And what I want to know is, have you coordinated with LFO so that you know what their process is? And do your regional solutions coordinators, the team leads, know what the rules are? And you don't have to answer now, but that was part of the problem. Then the other thing is, I can't help but look over your shoulder and see Ms. Lynch. And I am looking at your flowchart here. I presume that the submission for legislative review would also encompass an opportunity for the public to comment, because Ms. Lynch has not been totally enthusiastic about some of the local projects that have come forward, despite their local support. But I'm just wondering, where do you anticipate the public weighing in?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. That does seem like the right moment. I'd have to go back and make sure that we've got that tagged in at this point. But I believe that's what we had in mind.
It's in the rule.
And it is in the rule, Mr. Cummings assures me.
Senator Hansel.
Well, my question was also submit for legislative review on that two-month period of time. I think traditionally the third week in September is when we have ledge days, when we would be meeting. Mm. Is that what you're targeting for the legislative review?
Thank you, co-chairs, Senator Hansel. I believe that is what we have in mind. If I'm understanding correctly, the guidance.
Yes, that's my understanding as well.
Okay. So, Representative Rudin.
Yeah, I think we touched on most of this, and thank you for being here, Jason, and others. I'm looking at this process. I see it as looks like a very short project. So if I was going to do a highway or something, we could do the contract and get that done in a year. But as you know, we're working on a project in my region that probably take 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so could you clarify for me? The original support they're receiving now is for the planning, for all this work pulling together countless agencies and organizations in our region, doing some planning, doing some real work on the ground as well. But what's the point where on a long-term project, how do I get the next bag of money?
Mm-hmm. Co-chairs, Representative Reardon, thanks for the question. So yes, on long-term projects, that's certainly the kind of thing that a regional solutions team, and I know you're engaged with the one in your area, would be working with you on through the years. It is possible that somewhere in the process, RIF might be part of the funding for that. I think if you're in a planning phase, that's generally not where the RIF is active. This, because
right,
it's lottery
right.
bonds, we're talking about capital construction right. or in some cases planning that's directly tied to that construction. But with the broader suite of tools that a regional solutions team draws from agencies on, that's where they would be working with you through a multi-year project.
Okay.
Representative, just a curiosity, what's the project?
It's the Lent floodplain, Lent job creation floodplain restoration in outer southeast Portland, right near I-205. So it's a combination of jobs creation, environmental impact, and keeping people in their homes. They're in this floodplain that are affected by high rates of flood insurance. So
that's a very interesting point, because practically all of Oregon now is impacted by the FEMA redo. And for those of us that have coastal regions, you can imagine
Absolutely.
Almost every square inch is affected by some kind of water management device. It raises the...
That's along Betsy Johnson Creek. Oh,
I know exactly where Johnson Creek is. It raises the other question, though, of where is the point of coordination between all of these levee projects? And flood reduction and FEMA management. Levee Ready Columbia, which is an Oregon Solutions project, because there was such a lack of clarity in the rules, ended up $160,000 short. And they are working on levee reinforcement that protects Portland International and all of that industrial turf between the Columbia River and PDX. Again, not my district, but in an attempt to try to find coordination, where one district was only $160,000 short of being able to finish a phase of what they were working on. I still don't know if that's resolved. I think they were sent back to square one to begin doing reapplications. And that issue not notwithstanding, we get all of this work done, and I don't know where the core is. I presume you've got the core at your table, because you can make all the plans in the world, and the core comes in and says, not so much. That's the kind of work that I would hope that Regional Solutions would be monitoring, facilitating, and not just this hunt for money constantly. We got to bring home some of these big projects, and yours sounds like a multi-decade project even.
And it is, and their coordination has been essential to getting to where we are on this plan. We're bringing technical teams together, bringing finance, communications. And I just know that I keep getting sent back to talk to Mayor Wheeler asking for money. So at some point, I think we'll know enough. We can ask for bigger chunks of money, perhaps from the state. So I want to know how that part works. So.
But at the end, and I ask this using your project as an example, at the end, where is the global budget that brings the thing to conclusion so that you are not spending the next decade putting a Band-Aid on a slit throat? Having half a dam or half a levee is not reasonable. And I'm trying to figure out whose responsibility is it to monitor these mega projects to make sure that we can actually bring them to a successful conclusion instead of just piecing together little drips of money. And in the meantime, the regulatory environment gets weirder and worse, and we're just one bad rainstorm away from a horrific natural disaster.
That's a great question.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Lewisberry.
Thank you. I'll move to the next slide. So we've taken a look ahead at the process for the RIF, but I also wanted to share some of what we're seeing around the state in terms of the needs for infrastructure. So in the fall, we put out the word to communities saying we're interested in understanding what your infrastructure needs are, and that was both to see what potential contenders might be out there that would be future contenders for the RIF, but also just to understand the landscape of needs. So we know, you see on there was a lot of responses. Clearly, that is not going to be addressed by the RIF. So what the teams have been doing now is starting to sort those and figure out which ones might align well with other state resources. You can see that a lot of the projects are about water or wastewater or transportation, and those are now going to be directed and kind of aligned with the right place. And then some of these respondents, I assume, will also apply for the Regional Infrastructure Fund.
And Mr. Lewisberry, how many bites at the apple are you going to give the sophisticated grant writers who have the ability to crank out multiple grants and put rods in multiple bodies of water versus the little community where the grant writer is also the public works guy and also the dog control and also? Will there be any criteria so that you don't have the big guys crowding out the little guys at the minimal trough that we have?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. A big part of that, I think, is the rules that guarantee the $200,000 to each region to make sure that we have good geographic dispersal. And then beyond that, I think it's in the RFI process, that was a very light touch because, as Senator Johnson has pointed out, a lot of the smaller communities that we work with do not have the staff to handle a major application. So we kept that easy, and then we will keep the formal application process as streamlined as possible.
In case it's not obvious, I take huge exception to this. When you put out a casting call, tell us what you need. 104 responses. There's no possibility that those are all going to get funded. Have you now not made it more difficult to collaborate and to try to put together the mosaics of funding? Have you not built unfulfilled expectations that somehow, because the government asked us to give their list, that the list will be funded? Are these queue jumping other projects, where transportation, for example, where we have a lot of projects place named in House Bill 2017? I'm just trying to figure out, when you ask Oregon communities, what do you need? They need a lot more than we can fund. And are you managing expectations around those 104 responses?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I certainly understand the question. And most of these types of projects are things that these communities are already thinking about, already working on. And many of them, our Regional Solutions teams, would already have some awareness of. So I don't think there's a lot of new things created just to respond to an inquiry like this.
Are they all water, wastewater, and transportation, or do you have theaters and community centers and things like that in this?
The vast majority are along the lines of water, wastewater, and transportation. There's a couple of broadband ones. There's a couple other different ones here and there, but the vast majority are those type.
Thank you. Okay, please continue.
So just to give you an idea of some of the things that we heard in the process of hearing from communities, I have a couple of slides here, and I do want to stress this is just illustrative, the big caveat here. We haven't even put out the formal call for applications. So inclusion here is by no means an implication that these are projects that would get funding from the state. But you see some of the different types: construction of a seafood center in Port Orford, redevelopment of an old mill property, broadband has been important in North Central region, in Senator Hansel's region. We have airport hangar construction at the unmanned aerial system range, and certainly from the North Coast, an existing priority that we've heard about has been wastewater infrastructure at Tongue Point.
Let me ask you another question. Who does the vetting of these? And let me state for the record, I am very supportive of the UAS in Pendleton. I have, on my own dime and time, flown legislators out there to see it, because what they're doing, particularly in the area of managed irrigation, it's called Future Farm, is just remarkable, using unmanned platforms. But I'm curious, the hangar construction, has that been vetted with the master plan of the airport? Has somebody checked that there might be some federal funding available? I will tell you right now, the feds don't fund hangar construction, and Chris is an old airport planner. He knows that. But I'm just curious, whose responsibility is it when these projects come in to do that level of vetting?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. That is the responsibility of the Regional Solutions team, working with the local partners, the applicants, the airport folks, and the economic development folks, in this case, in the Pendleton area.
Okay.
And just one more slide of some examples. You see infrastructure needs at a couple of industrial sites, one in Redmond, one in Baker City. The project up there, building redevelopment for Gresham, is a part of a Rockwood Rising project that some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. Water storage for a new kind of agricultural opportunity in Polk County, and you have a community college looking for some certain equipment for some of their workforce training programs.
Can't resist the temptation. Water storage is up there. We have an $11 million funded project in Umatilla County that has not moved one molecule of water. And we are out searching for new projects, and that is appropriated money. Not one drop of water has moved. And we're just larding more projects into the pipeline where we're not delivering on the big ones. Did I lie about that project?
You did not.
Okay, let's keep going.
That is the end of my presentation. Thank you for the time. Happy to answer more questions.
Representative Rudin.
Hi, thank you. I'm just here to learn, so I'm curious. So a lot of these projects, I totally get the picture, but on one where, like a seafood project, I'm not picking on anybody from the coast, but like a seafood, there's how much of that would be, is there guidance on how much is public versus private money on something like that, or is there like a general guideline? Or I'm just is it old-fashioned of me to think businesses used to invest in their own buildings, and so how does
Co-Chair Representative Reardon, thank you for the question. I have to defer. There are people in this room who are no doubt more knowledgeable about that specific question, whether it's my colleague Chris Cummings or, frankly, some of the folks on this committee.
I can answer that because you picked on the seafood project. The company's putting in $25 million of company money, so they have deep skin in the game.
And how big is the project?
It's a $30 million project.
Okay.
Slightly less than that.
Is that where the fire was?
Yeah, it's where the fire was. It's 250 jobs tied to it. It was a 1940s vintage plant that burned right to the ground, right to the dock.
Okay, that helps.
And the whole project, maybe $25 million, and the state has a small piece of it for public infrastructure that would also be used by the public. So it is not private corporate inurement. It is for a public dock where the fleet can tie up and offload product.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that.
All right. Mr. MacArthur.
Good afternoon, Senator Johnson, co-chair, and co-chair Gomberg, members of the committee. Mike MacArthur, Executive Director, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here to talk more generally about the Regional Solutions Program. I have two views of this program. One is from the association's standpoint, where we're partners with the state of Oregon, the legislature, and the governor's office on supplying the funding for the Regional Solutions Coordinators through kind of an arranged marriage that we've grown accustomed to and somewhat comfortable with. And the other view I have is that of a convener of the Gorge Regional Solutions Advisory Committee, like Senator Johnson is with the Northwest. So I see it from two different aspects. I think it's a very valuable program. As I tell the folks on our advisory committee, this is your portal to state government. This is the way you get into the governor's office or get into various agencies to get your message across or find out how to solve your problems. We have a very active advisory committee, people really engaged, and see the value of having this coordinated view of community development in those particular counties. We think that it's a focal point, really, for community development. We have the federal programs through the Economic Development Administration. We have the rural development programs. And often these programs that we're talking about here are just a piece of the money. We really appreciate the regional investment, regional infrastructure fund, and the money that the legislature's appropriated, because it helps get the conversation going and show that our conversations there have meaning. In our area, we've focused on broadband and housing. And so, for instance, most recently, the last infrastructure money we got extended broadband from the Dalles to Maupin. And Maupin has a lot of potential for growth opportunity, but it needs that infrastructure. And that was a partnership with the Q-Life Network in the Dalles, which years ago was begun with Regional Strategies money. And then in Sherman County, we've been able to extend fiber north and south from Wasco into this, goes to the school in Sherman County and on to another point where it's also a multi-purpose use, emergency services, education, potentially healthcare. So anyway, the broadband extension has been one of the focal points in our region. So one of the difficulties I find with the way this system's set up right now is this funding is limited only to infrastructure. And as I've explained to the governor's office and some of you, it would be very useful to have some additional leverage money that was more flexible, not dedicated just to infrastructure. For instance, workforce funding can't be done with infrastructure money generally. So there's on the books a fund, a local opportunity fund, that's never had resources dedicated to it. Years past, we used to have more flexible money available to these regions.
But Mr. MacArthur, would it not be safe to say that there are limitations as to what can be funded with the proceeds of lottery bonds? I mean, you don't want to do operations with bonded debt.
No, of course not. But there are certain types of certain regions have identified priorities that would be useful and very helpful in moving projects forward, but can't be funded with infrastructure.
I might just share with you that there is a proposal right now. It's a proposed piece of legislation out of the governor's office that would gobble up available lottery money and sequester it to help address the unfunded liability of PERS. And I don't know to what degree, given your knowledge of county engagement, county solutions, how much you all at the county level have relied on available non-dedicated lottery money to pay for projects, and how deleterious or okay it would be to address some of the UAL with that highly flexible lottery money. I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
Senator Johnson, members of the committee, I sort of do, in that I think that the lottery money has been dedicated originally to economic development, and as I see it, it's highly leveraged in the projects that I've been familiar with over the years, and that leverage then creates more return of income taxes to the state, which helps pay these debts like PERS.
Okay, we're talking past each other. There is a bill proposed right now that would take revenue above the December 2017 projections and deposit it into side accounts for K-12 community colleges and universities after the constitutional distributions.
Right. Senator Johnson, I haven't studied that carefully. However, it seems to me that in order to grow the economy, in order to stimulate the economy, to create jobs, to create income taxes, which go to pay our bills, we'd be foot shooting to try and take that away.
I would commend this bill for your consideration. It will be in a committee near you tomorrow. And given your expertise in economic development, I think you understand the value that that flexible lottery money creates in the projects, the likes of which you've been discussing in this committee.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. We'll certainly pay attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone may have.
The only other question that I would pose to the group is, we have the third leg on the stool that the legislature also pays for, and that's Oregon Solutions that resides at Portland State. And perhaps, Mr. MacArthur, given your institutional history on Oregon Solutions, you might share with the committee, particularly some of our new members, how you see that relationship working and how regional solutions, county solutions, and Oregon Solutions, their definitions and how they are complementary or, in some cases, perhaps competitive.
Senator Johnson, yes, I'll try. The Oregon Solutions Program was born out of this notion that there was a method to getting to solving difficult problems and moving projects forward, and that involved getting a neutral convener with stakeholders, well-staffed by someone who understands the problem, understands the region. And so this project, or the program of Oregon Solutions, began at state government, was moved to Portland State as a not-for-profit. It's partnered with the National Policy Consensus Center and the Oregon Consensus. Those are all parts of the same organization, if you will. And Oregon Solutions looks to move projects forward. Oregon Consensus looks more to solve problems. And so this is a major tool that's available to the regional solutions advisory committees and the teams. When you see a sort of an intractable problem or see a project that's stalled and not moving well, give you an example. So when I was back in Sherman County, we had some folks come to us and say they wanted to build a wind farm. And they, the production tax credit was going to expire at the end of the year, so they needed to get it done this year. And they were concerned about some of the concerns that state agencies might have, like Fish and Wildlife, over putting up wind farms. There were none in that region at the time. So we convened an Oregon Solutions project around that. I got another county judge from another county to be the convener. We brought in all the farmers. We brought in the Energy Department. We brought in the Fish and Wildlife Department, all the stakeholders around the table, figured out a process, figured out the land use process. Everybody agreed, went forward with no appeals, and got built in that year. And that was the beginning of the wind farms in our county that grew to be a $1 billion industry.
Thank you. That was helpful. And I appreciate you giving the tutorial, particularly to our newer folks. Representative Rudd.
Yeah, thank you. And just for clarification, I've just reminded that my project is actually an Oregon Solutions project. So we are in that coordination. And you probably knew that already, but too many solutions, I guess.
Let me put one other refining point on Mr. MacArthur's comment. An Oregon Solutions project has to be tapped by the governor. And they have slightly different protocols in their operating methodology. For example, the group comes together, defines the problem, agrees on the answer, signs a declaration of cooperation that, in my experience, we just have finished the largest flood reduction and estuary restoration project, I think, on the West Coast in Tillamook, which incidentally got an engineering award. That declaration of cooperation kept recalcitrant folks at the table working when cowardice might have driven folks away.
It's a valuable process. It certainly has been so far.
But. Very. All right. Any other questions for this distinguished panel? Thank you very much, colleagues. This item was an informational hearing only. Mr. Lewisberry, before you leave, I think for the benefit of the committee, could you give us a regional solutions org chart that would include for all of the members on this? Well, I'd like an org chart of the entire state, and we'll be able to find our own folks. But the name of their staff person, who the team members are there, a phone number for the staff person, because I think there have been varying degrees of having the staff people out engaging with their legislators, and it would be very helpful to have the legislators be able to engage with the RSD staff.
Would be happy to.
All right, and if you get it to the professional staff, Mr. Bender can distribute it to the rest of us. All right, Mr. Bender, anything else?
No.
Mr. Bender says no. Colleagues, anything for the good of the order? There being none, we're adjourned.